Mike P. He's from the South Potomac region.
My name is Mike, and I'm an addict. Can you hear me now? And I really had to check myself before I wrecked myself with this mic, you know what I mean? Because I'm pilot, and I know that these guys is doing the best they can. And so we have to, at times I do, have to practice some restraint and some patience and tolerance until things fall into place. I know how difficult it is trying to make all this stuff work the way that it's supposed to work. And if you ever worked on one of these convention committees, you would know that things don't always go the way that you plan for it to go. So that was a good start for me to practice some restraint. I was, let me say this first. I want to thank the CMP region of Narcotics Anonymous for hosting this convention and the Montgomery County area for all the work that they do to put this convention on and make it happen. It's a lot that go into this, like I said before. And I also want to thank them for inviting me out to come out and participate in this convention. I've had a good time. Have y'all had a good time since we've been here? Yeah. I had a real, real good time. Now, I'm going to try to put this thing back up in here some kind of way. I hope it'll work without causing a lot of confusion, because I don't want to hold this all day long. But, yeah, things always work the way it's supposed to work when I'm out the way. And that's why it's so important for me to consciously and consistently check myself. I'm from the South Potomac area. My home group is the Steps to Life group, and we meet every Thursday night at 8 o'clock at 6400 Livingston Road in Oxon Hill, Maryland. If you're ever in that area, please come on out, and you're welcome, and join us in recovery. We have a lot of fun over there. This is a very, very powerful topic. I was just thinking about something. They asked me to share. I was speaking at my earlier speaker jam a couple weeks ago, and they gave me the topic of anonymity. And I said, dang, why did they give me some topic of anonymity, man? I don't want to really speak on no anonymity. You know, why don't they give me something jazzy like holding on with claw marks, or, you know what I mean, who am I when nobody looking, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they say, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. And they saw they gave me this topic, check yourself before you wreck yourself. So you got to be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. Being in recovery has been a journey for me, and one of the things that I had learned in this process is looking at myself. What the program requires us to do is to constantly take a look at your behavior, my behavior. Most people don't understand or comprehend, at least I begin to comprehend, that an addict is a very sick person. And I hold on to that because I know that there's a lot going on with me more than just the use of alcohol and drugs. Alcohol and drugs is just a symptom of what was going on with me. It's a little bit more than just alcohol and drugs that was going on. And through the inventory process, it helped me to kind of look at some of the things that was keeping me sick. Whether I was using or not, and that's what I had to understand, that it's a lot going on with me whether I'm using drugs or not. I don't have to be using drugs to lunch out. That's what I really want to tell y'all, you know. I can act, right button push, I can act just like you wouldn't know if I was using or not, you know. if the right button is pushed in my life. So this is so prevalent for me to constantly look at myself. And it started in, like I say, in that four-step inventory of finding out who I was and finding out the things that was keeping me sick and made me use in the first place. And it really started in my childhood, not being able to accept things and not being fearful and being powerless and not being able to control things that I was introduced to from my parents, not having a lot, being poor, not fitting in, always feeling a part of, always feeling less than, always feeling and looking outside of myself for acceptance, always wanting to be somebody else other than myself. You know, I wanted to be like Tony because he could dance real good. I wanted to be like Paul because he could dress real good. I wanted to be like Kenny because he could talk to girls real good, you know. And I was very introverted. You know, I was very ashamed and was scared to talk to women at an early age. But, you know, when I would go to them parties and they would have that stuff they mixed in the punch bowl and stuff, and I take a couple squeaks of that, you know, and then all of a sudden I could come off the wall and I won't be, you know, I wasn't the wallflower anymore, and I could fit in and be a part, and that kind of stuff became a friend to me. It became a crutch. It helped me do what I normally couldn't do on my own, and it just escalated to one thing, to another, to another, to another. And by the way, let me tell y'all that my choice of drugs is drugs. And, you know, you need to know that. And preferably, I like it more and free, especially free. You know, if you can give it to me free, I really like it like that. You know, I ain't got to pay for it, you know. And I use a long time against my will. And when I came to this program, I was more dead than alive, real frustrated, confused, purposeless, hopeless, and just existing. Wondering what had happened to a guy like me, because I never really wanted to be that way when I got here. I had aspirations, and I had goals, and I had things that I wanted to do in life. I wanted to be a professional football player. I was very good playing football in high school and basketball. And I wanted to be a professional athlete, or I like airplanes, I like jets, and you know, I wanted to fly jets. Either I could, you know, play ball or fly jets, and these were my goals. I wanted to do these kind of things, and you know, closer I came to flying was, you know, I was smoking that boat one time, you know what I mean? And, you know, and I took off, you know what I mean? I ain't had no space suit, no plane, or nothing, you know what I mean? Just took off, you know what I mean? Just lunching, you know. And that was a journey it was a journey. But during that journey, I made a lot of wreckage in the wake of living that kind of lifestyle. And I did a lot of damage to myself and also did a lot of damage to people that was close to me, that loved me, that wanted the best for me. They wanted nothing but the best for me, but being caught up in a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body and being caught up with something that was more powerful than me, that was demanding my life, forcing me to do things that I really didn't want to do against my own will, when telling myself that I wasn't going to do these things, and I wind up doing them over and over and over again. It's something when you don't want to do something and you use against your own will. And I used to tell myself that I wasn't going to spend all the money this time. That, you know, I'm going to separate this over here. I'm going to pay these bills. I'm going to buy the baby some shoes and we're going to get some food and, you know, we might catch a movie or something. But I got to get one just to, you know, get in the move. I owe myself one. I've, you know, been working all week. And so I need to just treat myself one time, you know. And that one treated itself, and that one treated itself, and everybody treated themselves. And when in the end, I was broke. I ain't had no money left. And that was a journey that I went on. And like I say, I left a lot of hurt, pain, degradation, unmet goals and aspirations as a result of living that lifestyle. And so when I came into this program, more dead than alive, real purposeless, hopeless, frustrated, confused, not knowing what had happened to me, a guy who had aspirations and goals, all my morals and principles and values were sacrificed as a result of using. And some that alcohol and drugs do is take away your dignity. And I wasn't living in human dignity anymore. I had sacrificed all that because it was more important to get high than to do anything else. It was more important. Using became paramount, the paramount thing in my life. That became more important than doing anything. You know, and when I started off, it didn't start off that way. It just started off having fun, being a part of a group of folks who were having fun on the weekend. Recreational, that's what they say it was. And but mine wasn't recreational because when I started off, I should have known something was wrong then because I always started off to get twisted, not just to recreate, you know, was nothing recreational about what I was doing. When I went to get high, you know, and I went to get blasted, and I went all the way from the beginning. And I crossed an imaginary line, which I cannot identify today, when it became controllable to uncontrollable, because I could remember buying drugs and putting it in the drawer and saying, this is for tomorrow, and leave it in there. Wouldn't touch it until minute after midnight, this tomorrow, you know. So, I was powerless from the beginning and didn't even recognize or realize really what I was up against. I was up against something that was the man in my life that was more powerful than me, and I didn't have any control over it. But I didn't know it at that time with my intellect and philosophy, because I thought that because I was intellectual, philosophical, analytical, logistical, that I knew how to handle what I was getting myself into. But the reality of the whole thing was I was dealing with something that was more powerful than me, that had more power than I had, and that could overtake me at any given point in time in my life and force me to do things against my own will. And I did that for a long time until I came until this program of Narcotics Anonymous. And I haven't looked back since being here. My clean date is August the 14th, 1986, and if it be God will, I'll be celebrating my 24th anniversary coming this August, I am truly, truly humble and grateful. I don't even really like even talking about that. I only share that just to let you know that I was just a little more fortunate to get here before some others. That's all that means. That don't mean nothing else, because I cannot stay clean on yesterday's recovery. What I did yesterday has no bearing on what I need to continually to do today. And that's so important about what I do today, and that's why this topic is really ideal for me, because I can fall in a false sense of illusion and delude myself into thinking that because I've been here for a while that I don't need to do some of the things that I did when I first got here. And that will set myself up for a train wreck again, because I'm dealing with something that's going to be there all the time that don't have anything to do with clean time, with the amount of time you have. The disease don't care how much time you have. It don't care how much money you have. It don't care where you went to school at. It don't care who your mother is, who your father is, you know, what color you is. It don't care what kind of sex you are, what your sexual preference is. Whether you black or white or green or purple, whatever, it don't care. It don't even care about that. It has one mission, and that is to destroy your life. the best way I can. You know what I mean? So I have to constantly be vigilant about my disease before I wreck myself. Check yourself before you wreck yourself. And that's so very important, especially for me today, because so many good things have happened to my life, and I am into places that people don't even know that I'm an addict, because I don't act like an addict. And I'm in arenas and stuff where I tell people with PhDs and doctorate degrees what to do. And my degree come off, Bird Farms and Alabama Avenue and, 14th and T and, Swan Street and, Potomac Gardens and, my education come off the street. I had a PhD. I was a poor, helpless dummy. that's what I was, And so I have to constantly watch me. Success can be a trap in this new way of life once you experience freedom. I want to read something out of this book real quick. Is that okay with y'all? I just want to read a little something. I'm not going to do a lot. But there's something in here that was so important to me that I saw that kind of caught my eye. It was a wake-up call for me. It says that when we first begin to enjoy relief from addiction, we run the risk of assuming control of our life again. We forget the agony and pain that we have known. Our disease controlled our lives when we were using. It is ready and waiting to take over again. I want to read this too, and it says that it is easy to slip back into our old ways. To ensure continued growth and recovery, we have to learn to maintain our life on a spiritually sound basis. So what it's saying is that I can easily slip back into my old ways if I'm not aware of what I'm doing. My disease, and I don't believe it's known to man, even today, maybe one day scientists may find a way that we won't be haunted or tempted or bothered by our codependency and our character defects. But I believe that it's nowhere written or documented that we are free from these things and that they never come back to haunt us again. It come back to haunt me, and it haunts me in a way that is very cunning and baffling. It has what I consider a seductive spell over me. And what it does is make me believe something that's not true. And I run on what I feel in my emotions, and I validate that, and what I do is go into immediate denial and act like what is going to happen to me won't happen because I'm being forced to under a spell to do something that I don't want to do. Don't y'all look at me funny, because I know y'all doing it too some kind of way. Y'all not need to stop that. I was at a workshop last year, and a guy was saying about he had a T-shirt on. And on his T-shirt, he had a picture of a rat. And this rat was sitting in front of this rat trap, and he was looking at that cheese. Now, you would think that anything that's going to kill you, that you will run far away from it as you can. But what this rat did was went and put a helmet on. And what he was doing was trying to cushion the blow of a harsh reality. And sometimes I'm like that rat. I put that helmet on to try to cushion the blow of a harsh reality. And my mind will take me to places to make me think that something's going to happen, and it ain't going to happen, and I know it ain't going to happen, but my mind will tell me what's going to happen. Like the other day, I was looking in the papers, I seen the Mega Million thing up in there. They got about 150 million sitting up in there. And my mind said, well, you need to go ahead and play a ticket because you might get some money. But reality is that I've been playing for years and ain't never got no money. They ain't hit it yet. But some tell me it's all right to play. I'm cushioning the blow of a harsh reality. And I can do that in this process. And as a result of not watching myself, I can wreck myself. Because I can get caught up in that so much where I become irresponsible and not pay the bills, not pay my insurance, not buy food. I take all my money and get caught up in dressing up the outside. Like I came down here, this outfit is new, you know what I mean? And I can get caught up in buying stuff and lose the fact of what is real and what I really need to be doing in this process. It's so easy to be caught up under a spell of delusion and forget that I'm an addict with an incurable disease. It's so important that I keep that up front. When I'm performing maintenance, and that's what I'm really doing on myself on a daily basis, I'm looking at myself on a daily basis in reference to the things that keep me sick. Because I'm more emotional sick, and a lot of time I'm frequently wrong. And it's important that I realize and admit that when I'm wrong. You ever been in a situation or a circumstance where you swore up and down that you was right and you just went up one side and down the other side of a person and then come back to find out that you was dead wrong? And then you had to eat humble pie and then find ways to avoid not going back telling them you was wrong. And so I learned at times, instead of getting in these heated debates and stuff, I learned to restrain myself and shut my mouth, because a lot of time I am frequently wrong. And if I don't have all of the information, then I need to be quiet and wait till the proper information come along and then say something. And then when I say it, I have to say it in a loving, caring, kind way, so that I don't hurt or produce harm to someone else. I can easily hurt someone even in this process of recovery. I'm never free from my defects. They're always lurking in the dark, trying to find ways and means to get in to disrupt my life. And like I say, I don't have to use again for me to be non-productive. If it can make me non-productive, then it's being successful. If it makes me not be responsible, then it's being successful. I don't have to, like I say, I don't have to use to be lunching. I could be lunching just clearly because my emotions is unbalanced. You know what I'm saying? My feelings is involved. You know, the relationship not going right. I don't know why she won't do what I tell her to do. Don't she know I'm in recovery and I know what's right by now? You know what I mean? I put that helmet on. The harsh reality is she okay because you in recovery. She remember when you stole her money out the pocketbook. She had to sleep with it and go to bathroom with her pocketbook. And I forgot all about that. And then I had to go sit down. Yeah, you right. How much time is that?
7 minutes.
I had to go buy some tires for my car, and they were worn out. I had them for a while, and I took them to the shop, and I bought them. And when I bought them, they didn't put no air in the tires. And I said, what you mean you didn't put no air in the tire? Because I didn't know. I didn't know that some places, man, what they doing, they're not putting air in tires, they're putting nitrogen in tires. It's a new thing. And I didn't know that. Because nitrogen's supposed to make your tires last longer, and the nitrogen's supposed to give you a better ride, a smoother ride in your car. And I didn't know that. And the guy told me, well, look here, you know, when you get a chance, don't drive too long. Take your car and take it somewhere and get the front end aligned. Other than if you keep driving the way that it is, what's going to happen is you're going to wear out these new tires just like the old tires wore out. And I said, okay, I'll do that. And then he said, well, I'm going to recommend this place that you can take your car and get the front end aligned. And my mind say, no, I'm not going to go where you say go. Y'all got a deal going, you know. I ain't take my car over there. I'm going to take it to where I've been taking it to, you know. So I proceeded listening to myself. And took my car over there where I normally would take it. And when I took it there, they went in and gave me a price. The price they gave me was higher than the price that the original person gave me. And so they went in, lined my car, whatever. I'm driving home. Next thing I know, the car is pulling to the left. And so I said, wait a minute, something ain't wrong. Something ain't right with this alignment. Because I've been driving the car for a while, and if you have a vehicle and it's yours, you know how your car's supposed to be riding. And so it's pulling, so I had to go back another day and take it and say, look, man, there's something right with this alignment. Y'all need to straighten up. It's pulling to the left. They said, no problem, bring it on in. And they went in and went, take it back there, take off or spend time to go in there. And they went in and did what they did, and it was still off. And so something came to my mind, say, look, I'm not keep going back and forth. You should have listened to the people in the first place. So I said, that's how I feel. I'm going to fix this. I'm going to take it back to the dealer where I know they know how to align this thing. And so I wound up having to spend more money taking it back there to get them to do it. Well, they got it right, and that's a good thing. But my point is that I wound up spending more money, wasting time, had I not listened to the guy in the first place and took a chance on what they were saying, because they do this stuff all the time. I don't know all the answers to everything. And that's just a case of me getting in the way and not trusting my defects coming into play and making me late, because I got to go three different times to take care of one problem. I don't really have that kind of time, man. I got to look at TV, the games, and all that kind of stuff, you know. I ain't got all that time for it. I keep running back and forth, sitting up in there waiting for y'all to get my dog on car straight. I got things to do. I got business, you know what I mean? And so I learned a valuable lesson. I was at my house. I was cutting some trees down. Snow had knocked down, tore down a lot of trees. And I got this chainsaw. And so I was cutting trees, and I was just cutting. I got a new toy. Done. You know, and I'm just going. And I wind up cutting down a tree that wasn't on my property. And my neighbor, he came out and he was cordial and we was talking and whatnot. And he was saying, that tree right there, I want to keep that one. And I was just thinking, then I looked at where I was at and what I was doing, and what I had did was went in on his property and was cutting down some of his trees. And And when he approached me and when he said it, and he did it cordially, I had to step back and look at myself. And what I found out was that I was wrong. And I had admitted, but it was something inside of me that wanted to say, man, look here, look. Look, I take this chainsaw and, you know. I had to eat that. I had to sit on my feelings because I was wrong. I was wrong, and I had to admit that I was wrong. And so that was a learning experience for me to continue to check myself before I wreck myself. It was a song that says that, don't push me. Cause I'm close to the edge. I'm just about to lose my head. You know, it's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. And that's how I be sometimes, you know, like, you know, on that edge. And so I have to do the work to pull myself back up. There's another song say self-destruction. You had it. You had it for self-destruction. And so I have to consciously look at myself on a daily basis and admit, the biggest thing is admit when I'm wrong, accept when I'm wrong, and then move on about the business of living life. Because my emotions can become unbalanced. I'm emotionally sick, and I find myself putting out a lot of emotional fires so that they don't escalate into me wrecking what God has given me in this beautiful program, or wrecking my peace. My time is up, man, and I just thank y'all for being here for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Mike P. I'd like to introduce our second speaker. Her name is Tina Kay, and she is from the Frederick area.
Check. I just had to get that out. I'm an addict, very grateful addict named Tina. You know, and I am so grateful to be home. And when I say that literally because this is my home. I grew up in this area. I grew up on the Eastern Shore. And I grew up in a little town called Somerset County, which is like an hour and a half away from here. It's nothing but the sticks. But you know, we got high down there. You know, we survived down there. I mean, we did whatever it took down there to survive. This is the second convention that I've been to since I got clean, and I didn't even realize it until I started processing some information as I was coming down the road yesterday, and I started to reveal some things to my traveling companions, and. It never hit me that I stayed away purposely because, you know, I got high, and then we would come to Ocean City, and we would continue to get high, you know, so it wasn't nothing to jump in the car and take a road trip, and we wind up in Ocean City. And so when they say about being on a roller coaster, I've been on the roller coaster when I was high. At the end of this, at the end of the boardwalk, there's a little amusement park. It's called Semper Rides. And there's the Wild Mouse. That's the roller coaster. And, you know, can you imagine being on a roller coaster while you're high? It was fun. Man, that was like the ultimate high. It like enhanced the high. You know, it blew the high. Then you had to go back and get high some more and start all over again. And that's what this process is like. But only thing different is instead of getting high, I'm saying I'm clean now. My clean date is March the 24th, 1992, and I just celebrated 18 years of recovery. And I've worked a program of recovery, and I say that because we can be in recovery and not work a program. You know, we can come into meetings and we can go to the meetings, we can dress ourselves up outside looking good, and we still all foul on the inside. You know, when I got my topic for this convention after I found out I was gonna speak, And I got it in the mail. You know, the addict that I am, I can't wait. I got to do it right now. I was just going on my way to work. And so I couldn't wait to stop. I had to open the envelope while I'm driving. You know, that's dangerous. And then I read it, and it says, check yourself before you wreck yourself. And I'm like, ah! And I'm like, oh, Tina, calm down. And I'm like, oh, that's a good one. And I started getting, ah! And I'm like, people were like running around looking at me like, what the hell is wrong with her? You know? But I was so excited because it was like, dang. And I kept saying, I can work this. And then, you know, I'm like, you ain't working nothing. You're going to move out of the way and allow God to do his work. That's what humility is. And so, you know, that's what I'm doing. I'm moving out of the way as much as I want to put myself all up in there, sound real good, I'm moving out of the way. And what I do is, what I did is I was outside and went out back and I was looking over the ocean. And I'm like, wow, that's what serenity looks like. You know, and it's like, and then I, of course, start to pray, because that's something that I do. I pray before I get in front of people and start running my mouth. Because, you know, I'll tell a whole bunch of lies. I'll sound real good. Lying. So what I got from this is this step encompasses all the house cleaning steps, and I start at 4. You know, this is the 4th step is where I did that. I did my own personal inventory. I didn't take nobody else's, and I worked from there. It's like the house cleaning steps. It's where you set the trash out, and you continue to put the trash out, and you keep it out. That's like from 4 to 10. And then 11 and 12 help you just to continue to stay on that path. The prayer and meditation part, that keeps you right there on the path, on the beam, as they say. You know, and my first 4th step I did, you know, I was sharing with my traveling companions yesterday, I had to grieve. My grandmother, my mother's mother, she died when I was 17, and she died 2 days before I had my first child. I got pregnant at 17, had my first child, and my grandmother died. And I didn't know how. They told me not to cry. I didn't go to her funeral. I was in the hospital in 12 hours of hard labor by myself. You know, there was nobody there, and I'm like screaming. I'm 17. I don't know what childbirth is like. And the nurses, they came and shut the door. So there was nobody there to hold my hand. Nobody dared to say, oh, come on, sweetie, let me give you the epidural. You know, none of that. They just allowed me to go through that pain. That is physical pain. Women know that have child that has been through childbirth, that ain't no joke. You know, you guys are so lucky sometime. And so I stopped that. You know, I put that over to the side. And I didn't realize that's what we do in our active addiction. We just kind of like take stuff and stuff it in an envelope. I'll deal with that later. We still do that even in recovery. I'll deal with that later. I ain't ready for that yet. You know, but it comes a point in a time in our lives when we have to start looking at that stuff. Because the only way we're going to be able to look at the heal is by attending to those things that are keeping us bound up. And that's the wreckage of our past. You know, and or even the wreckage of the present, because we are in recovery and we still carry wreckage. You know, it might not be in the manner of drugs anymore, but it could be in the manner. I like to shop. I'm a shopper. Once I gave up those drugs, man, I realized I love to shop. You know, I like to gamble, and I ain't even gonna lie about that. I like to gamble. Like, take my little money to Charlestown races and slots and give them a portion of my hard-earned dough. And it's no different from me giving it to the drug man. You know, and then that's wreckage. But I'm not, and I can justify in my head and say, I'm not addicted to gambling. You know what I'm saying? I can say that. But to me, it's still a portion of my addictive personality. Because I will take something that is so nice and sweet, and I will just overdo it. Like the food. I see you, Patrick. The food. Whatever it takes that brings me comfort. and joy, sex. Ooh, you know, lots of comfort and joy right there if it's done right. and I can abuse it. You know what I mean? We can abuse it to the point where it no longer is something that we have to put on the fourth step again and work on it. And, of course, tell our sponsor about the exact nature of it. You know, and that's how it works. And so while I was going through this first fourth step with my sponsor, having to grieve for grandma, and then all these feelings kicked up about mama, because mama treated me like crap, you know, it's like a vicious cycle. You know, needless to say, as a result of doing all of that work over the years, I have a very loving relationship right now with my mother. My mother was horrible to me. And, you know, that's the God's honest truth. I can sugarcoat it any way I want, but the bottom line is she was horrible to me. And I was sharing my companions yesterday that there was no doubt in my mind that my grandmother loved me. No doubt. I never had to question whether she loved me or not. My parents, on the other hand, I questioned it every day. It didn't matter that they put clothes on my back and they fed me and took care of my other brothers and sisters. I questioned it every day because, see, I always felt different. And, you know, I don't know. And I'm not different. I'm the same. I'm still one of their kids. I mean, I'm number 4 out of 11. You know, so I had to fit in there somewhere. And I became the caretaker in that family. I took care of everybody. And that role got so comfortable, you know. I still have the habit of falling into that role every now and then. And, you know, when somebody suggested that I come to the convention and I speak at this convention, I automatically wanted to cheat myself and say, oh, I'll just drive down for the day. The kids need me. My kids are grown. You know, I have 2 grandchildren. Oh, but they need me. No, they got 2 parents. They'll be okay till grandma gets back. You know, but I want to take care of people because that's what I do. You know, I even, like, went to school just so I could continue that caretaking stuff and became a nurse. You know, and I still take care of people. But I get paid good money for it, so I don't mind that. But, you know, but I've learned how to separate it. You know, I've learned how to separate it because I know when I'm not feeling good about something that I'm doing, then it's not right. You have to feel it, and I have to feel it inside, in my spirit. When my spirit is leaping with joy, then I know I'm doing the right thing. And that's how this program works. It's like, okay, I'm going to work on myself today. I don't care what you say. I'm just going to do this thing. It ain't even about you. This is about me. Because I'm saving my life. I can't carry you along with me, so guess what? You got to go. And I had to do that when I got in recovery. I had somebody in my life. And when I went to rehab the second time around, I left that person right here on the Eastern Shore. And I said, you know what? I want something. I'm tired. I am tired. And, you know, when you get sick and tired of being sick and tired, that's when you get up and you really start to do some work. You can walk around and muck around in this program for years, and then all of a sudden something is going to hit you so broad-sided that you're going to either have to do some work or you'll go back out and use. And if you're like me, using is not an option for me anymore. And so what I do is I do some work. You know, I go to a lot of step meetings, and I love step meetings. You know, in fact, every time, you know, like last weekend we went to a meeting and it was an anniversary, and I was mad because I wanted to hear the step. And we would have been on the 8th step. You know, that would have prepared me for coming up in here making that daggone list. You know, making a list of those people that I harmed. You know, that's what the 8th step is. You know, so I've been reading a lot more. You know, I feel really good because, you know, when you get a lot of time in recovery, sometimes, man, it gets, not only do life show up, but complacency will sit in as well. And the energy and the zest that you felt in the beginning is not there anymore. And it takes a lot of work to get plugged back in. And, you know, over the 18 years that I have been clean, I have seen the area that I got clean in I've seen it change so much. You know, like the people I got clean with, they're no longer there. So I'm having to do more work by reaching out to people. And, you know, I don't want to do that sometimes. I don't want to pick my phone up and call nobody and say, hey, I need help, I'm hurting. Because, hey, you know, most of us think if we get a lot of time clean, we got all the answers. We don't need any help. What I need your help for? I know. And that will get you in trouble. Because then I know what I'm doing is I'm not doing what is required to continue to on the path. You know, I just kind of like getting by. And so I've been doing more and more as a result of that because, you know, this is my recovery. You know, and the other thing I've been, like, being in this in Ocean City this weekend, man, is like I keep seeing just like scenes flashing in my head from when I used to come here as a child, you know, and not only just doing the roller coaster stuff, but just being with my family. I mean, you know, my dad, he would bring us here as kids. We'd all pile up in his little 3-seat station wagon. Y'all remember those? They had 3 seats, one in the front, one in the front, one in the middle, and one in the back. And he piled all these kids, all his kids in his car, and we'd drive us to Ocean City, and we'd be listening to Al Green and Otis Redding and Wilson Pickett, all those good old guys. You know, and I've been thinking about that. And then and what it's doing is showing me, well, you said that they treated you horribly. But what I'm hearing and seeing right now is no, they treated you with love, with the love that they could give you at that time, you know. And I'm like, wow. So I've been just like really, it's like really hit me this weekend being here, because like I said, this is the first time I've been here since I was 2 years clean. And when I came 2 years clean, I came with an addict that was still using, you know, and. It didn't have the same effect on me that it's having on me this weekend. And so I've been kind of like been very quiet and kind of like just being really reflective. And, you know, the other thing about this step, you know, it's teaching me about my character defects, what they are, when they come out, because I know I still have them. And I remember talking to somebody a couple of days ago, and they said, well, I like my character defects, and I ain't never going to get rid of them. And I remember saying the same thing. I remember saying, oh, there are some of my character defects I ain't never going to get rid of. But the thing of it is when it's time for them to go, God will remove them, and you don't even be aware that they're gone. Because, you know, when you stay in this program and you stay clean and you work a program of recovery, everything changes. And that's the truth. They say, what do I have to change? You change everything. Everything changes. And that's the truth. And you know, I couldn't process that years ago, but now I do. And I couldn't even understand in the beginning when I first came into rooms that people were talking about. You know, I just sat there and I listened. You know, and I'm like, well, I don't know what she's saying, but I guess it makes sense. But then, as I continue to listen and continue to learn, continue to work my steps, and then start to sponsor people and start giving back, all of that stuff start to click. It's like, oh, I know this. And then, you know, and they always talk about walk the walk and talk the talk. Before long, when you stand here, man, you start running and you don't stop. And that's the most awesome experience in the world, is knowing that, man, I did something for me that nobody else could do for me. You know, that is so awesome when you're able to do something for yourself that nobody else had a hand in it. All they did was give you a couple of suggestions, helped you work some steps, and said, you know, loved you up, hugged you up. But in the end result is, I did it. I did the work. And when I do the work, I benefit from the results. Nobody else do. Of course, my kids did, because they were able to have mom home. Mom wasn't using. Mom wasn't stealing their PlayStation and selling it. You know, I didn't have to sell another glass table. And I had this beautiful glass table with these pretty red chairs. And I sold this table to a drug dealer. And my daughter started crying. And I'm like, what you crying for? I really love that table. I couldn't even process that. You know, I couldn't process the fact that that table meant something to her. I had no idea. All I knew is that I had to go get me some drugs. And besides, we were leaving anyway, so what was I going to do with her table? I was going to jail. She was going to her aunt's house. But it didn't even matter. It broke my heart to see her do that. But the addict that I was, and being in the throes of my active addiction, it didn't even register. It wasn't until years later it really hit me what I had done. And I had no idea she cared that much about that damn table. All I cared about was getting high. And I was having a house sale because I was going to jail. You know, I had to go to jail. I had did this to these as a result of coming to Ocean City and doing all this drinking and riding on these roller coasters and stuff. I had a DWI. The first one, they brought me to Ocean City and put me in the jail. And I remember being in there, I was so drunk, I was screaming and kicking and just carrying on something terrible. And the people that I was with, they left me in Ocean City in the jail. And I'm saying to myself, when they finally let me go after I calmed down, I'm like, why the hell y'all leave me? Oh, we want to get caught and go to jail. I'm like, well, somebody got to come and get my ass because I'm in Ocean City. You all way down here. And, you know, and I thought about it. But, you know, that didn't stop me from getting high. They didn't stop me. I got the DWI. I got the court date. I told the judge I wanted to go to rehab. In fact, I did go to rehab. And I sat in there for those 30 days. And I did that thing. And I came out and I got clean for about 90 days. And then that me and this chick came to Ocean City to a convention. And she wanted to go and drink some shooters at one of the bars. And guess what? That's where we wind up, in the bar, drinking shooters. And it started all over again. And that's how this disease is. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Very, very, very insidious. But recovery is, on the flip side, is just a wonderful, wonderful way of life. And that's the only thing I can say about it. So, you know, so I was talking to y'all about step eight. You know, through the years, I have managed to clear up my eighth step with everybody that I had harmed. But recently, because of this recession, I'm going to call it the recession, but the reality is because of me trying to be greedy, being in this program. See, when you get clean, you stay clean for a while, you start making good money, like I got a nice job now, you amass some stuff. And then they get to the point where, you know, you want to keep adding more and more and more. See, that's the addictive nature of our disease. The exact nature of our disease is more. Because we are not satisfied with less, we're satisfied with more. And so, as a result of that, I got into some financial difficulties. So now I got to put these financial people on my daggone eight-step list after I done cleared it all off years ago. Well, when I came into recovery, I didn't have anything anyway. I ain't want nothing because, see, to have to have a house and a car and all that stuff mean that money will have to go pay bills, and I need that money to pay my drug dealers. So I didn't have anything. When I moved to Frederick County, I had two suitcases and a cosmetic bag. And that's what I walked, rolled up in there with. And now I got house, cars, and a mountain of debt. You know, and so the process starts all over again. So now what I'm doing is working the steps on my mountain of debt and how to figure out how I'm going to make amends to all of my people that I owe money to. Because, see, I could take the easy way out and file bankruptcy. I could do that, but see, I don't believe in doing that because, see, I'm cheating myself out the benefit of doing some work. And so day by day, year by year, I'm taking some steps to ensure that these people are going to get their money. And I remember talking to one creditor on the phone a couple of weeks ago. Man, she pissed me off. And she said, well, I guess you want us to just take the money that you owe us and just make it disappear. And I said, I didn't ask you to do that. I asked you, how can we make a workable solution so I can pay the bill? And she was so nasty. She told me, well, I've never been in that situation before. And I said, honey, I pray to God that you don't. And so what I've been doing is talking with my creditors. I no longer run from them. I call them up on the phone myself and talk to them. So, okay, what are we going to do? How are we going to work this? This is what I can do for you. And I make a workable solution. You know, and that, to me, is being responsible. You know, I'm a responsible, productive member of society. And as a result of that, I'm going to take care of what the damage that I did. And that's how I work it. And see, the damage wasn't caused by nobody else but me. Although I helped people along the way, my damage was a direct result, not of using, but of being clean in recovery and still being unmanageable. And we do that. Even in recovery, there is unmanageability. And right now, I'm in financial unmanageability. But, you know, it's getting better. And because I'm doing what's necessary. I'm not going to run and hide. I refuse to, because to me, that's shame on my part. I will experience a great deal of shame if I was to take the easy road out, considering how hard I have worked over the years to get here. You know, I'm telling you, it was such a great honor for me to be able for someone to come and ask me to speak at a convention, mainly because I did the work, and I deserve to be in the spot right today. I deserve to be right here because I did the work. And I'm not here telling no story or trying to glorify myself. But the thing is that when you do the work, the benefits will show. You know, we get a new walk. We get a new look. You know, and it's not always wreckage. It's some good stuff about this program, man. Actually, it's a lot of good stuff. You know, I wake up. I was listening to somebody coming down here, a CD, and they were talking about when they were high, they wake up and they hear these damn birds chirping and they'll take and pour hot water on the birds. You know, I enjoy listening to those birds. That's my wake-up call. I heard them this morning outside the hotel window. And I'm like, wow. And I never get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. My time to get out of bed is 9 a.m. I was out of that bed at 7:30. In the diner eating breakfast, never eat breakfast. And I was at this convention hall by 9:30. You know, I don't do no stuff like that. Not in the real world, I don't. And I am so glad to be here. You know, and I can't even express that enough. Because, see, I feel like God gave me an opportunity, you know, to show up for life today, man. And you know, that's important, being able to show up, stand up, look good for life. And whether nobody else think I look good or not, I know that I look good and I feel good. You know what I'm saying? That's all. It's all about me, not about nobody else. And I'm okay with that. You know, my sponsor used to tell me years ago, and that helped me so much in early recovery because I was so concerned about what that image and what other people thought about me. And she always said, what other people think or say or do about you is none of your business. And I love that. And, you know, it took a long time for it to process. But in the end, that's the way I operate now. It ain't none of my business what you say. Say what you want. And then the other thing she always tell me was 2-3-11, 2-3-11, 2-3-11. I think she just like drummed those steps in my head. I can't, he can, I know I will let him. You know, and it was like, wow. When I finally got it, I'm like, why you want me to read that again? And she just kept saying, just read it. Just do it. Trust me. You know how when you first come in recovery, you don't trust nobody. You don't even trust yourself. You can't even make a conscious decision. You know, oh, I don't like women. Because they don't understand me. I can relate better to men. Yeah, because they tell you what you want to hear. You know, and I was the same way. Oh, I don't like women. I grew up with five sisters. They got on my last nerves, and they did. But I was better prepared than most women that came in to recover because of my experience with the five sisters. And I learned how to bond with women early on in my recovery, you know. And you know, the thing is, like I said, a lot of the people that I came into recovery with, they're gone. I don't know where they are. I'm sure they're doing their own thing, and I'm sure they're still clean. But I still stand, and I still show up, you know, and that's important. So if you got a lot of clean time, still continue to show up for the newcomer. And for the newcomer, you know, somebody wrote in my book the day I left treatment, and they told me, don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle. You know, and I'm telling you, because this program really, really works. If you're willing to let it work for you. If you're not ready, then go back out and get some more, do some more research for me. Because now what y'all doing is just doing the research for me. Because, see, that way I don't have to go back out there. I got people, the newcomers, continuing to come in, doing that research, looking like I look. 107 pounds, skin all sallow, cheeks sunken in, you know, hair falling out. Can't claim that today. So I don't need to go back out there. I see what's out there. I don't have to do that anymore. Or the person that died last night as a result of this disease. You know, if you don't believe it works, will work for you, then just go ahead. Don't waste your time sitting around here. But if you think it's gonna work for you, stick and stay. Stay around for a minute. Longer than a minute, because you actually might hear something that will save your life tonight. You know, and that's all I got. My name is Tina Kay. I am an addict.